We're here now with a legend in the crypto space. Billionaire Sam Bankman-Fried is the co-founder and CEO of FTX, one of the largest exchanges in the world. We'll be talking about his backstory, his outlook on the crypto exchanges and currencies, and of course, the best projects and protocols to follow today. Sam, it's your first time on KitGo. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to be talking about FTX and, of course, your latest projects and your partnership with WonderFi, amongst other things. But first, I want to get your outlook on the industry. I don't think anybody has a better pulse on it than you. I'm hearing this from a lot of my friends, even my friends from work, my personal friends. They're all telling me the same thing. They're saying, David, hey, this is the last hurrah for Bitcoin or any cryptocurrencies. Come December, we're going to get the last bull run. After that, everything's going to crash. That's just the sentiment I'm hearing. Is that true?
I mean, look, I can't predict the future for sure. You know, not investment advice. There will always be more crashes. There will always be more bull runs. My best guess is that over the next few years, we may see substantial institutional adoption of cryptocurrencies. I think we've seen a number of large institutions soft commit to using them in one way or another, although they haven't actually started implementing that yet. But I think that potentially provides a big set of inflows on the medium to long-term horizon over the next couple of years.
Suppose we do have a crash, because like you said, things come in cycles, things come in waves. Suppose we do have a 2018 style crash. What kinds of projects do you think would survive this downturn in the next bear cycle?
Yeah, and I think that generally the projects that you see surviving the best are the ones that have huge, really loyal followings, and the ones that have really important use cases. I think the ones that seemed more like hype driven often crash the hardest. But when you look at projects that have either a lot of real adoption or the potential for a lot of real adoption, those are projects that, you know, loyalists are going to be backing even during bear markets. And so I think that you're looking at, you know, blockchains that could see huge adoption. I think you're looking at, you know, various exchanges and other infrastructure players are going to be key to the space going forward. And, you know, anything else that seems like it has an important future that can't just be sort of replaced by a competitor.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What do you think are the best protocols right now for mass adoption? In other words, what is the next Bitcoin, Ethereum, so on and so forth?
Yeah, you know, I don't know for sure, but what I will say is that if you look at what it would take to have, say, a billion people use cryptocurrency, to have a billion people use blockchain infrastructure, right? If each one of those is sort of using it in the same way that we use social media or finance today, that's going to be creating probably millions of transactions per second for the blockchain. And you can see this if you just look at the transaction throughput of current large financial, social media, or basically any large online application. And, you know, from that perspective, you know, one thing that I've thought about a lot is what are the blockchains that could scale to that level, that could scale to millions of transactions per second in a composable native way? I've been on the record a lot saying that I think Solana has a real shot at doing so, which I think is really exciting. I think, you know, there are other tokens out there as well that are aiming to scale quite a bit. You know, Avalanche is one of them. But I think that is really the thing that I look at the most, because, you know, a lot of other parts of the crypto ecosystem are really important, but are also things that can, in theory, be improved for basically any blockchain. I think the core technology of it is something which is much harder to completely overhaul.
So Sam, given that Solana does have many qualities that supersede Ethereum, do you think it's possible for Solana's market cap to exceed Ethereum's market cap at some point? And if so, can we see that happen anytime soon?
You know, it could happen. It could never happen. And I think that you know, one of the things we've seen is, look, there's the underlying blockchain protocols. There's also the tokens affiliated with them. And, you know, there is certainly an extent to which these tokens can follow the adoption of the protocols that they're tied to. There's also an extent to which they can gain, you know, mass adoption, even if their protocols don't, right? And, you know, I think Bitcoin is probably the cleanest example of that, where it is by far the largest cryptocurrency and the most known cryptocurrency in the world. And that's not because people are using the Bitcoin blockchain for a lot of things other than Bitcoin. The Bitcoin blockchain is for Bitcoin. Which is the long way of saying, look, you could see mass institutional adoption of, ETH, the token, whether or not you see mass institutional adoption of Ethereum, the blockchain. And so it's hard to make a concrete prediction about what the pricing action of that will be. And on the flip side, right, you could see Solana fail to gain mass adoption on the blockchain side. I'm optimistic that there is real upside there, but that doesn't mean it necessarily will be realized, right? Maybe it has serious issues. Maybe another blockchain comes in and competes, or maybe no blockchains end up managing to get where we all think they have a shot at going.
Do you think Solana could be the base for more DeFi applications in the future?
Yeah, I think it absolutely could be. And I think that is one of the most compelling parts about it, is that it does have the potential to scale to the place where things are needing to scale to if blockchain gets huge. And it has the potential to host DeFi applications for hundreds of millions to billions of people on top of it with a giant composable ecosystem. Again, that's not to say it necessarily will happen, but it could happen. And I think that's really exciting.
Well, generally, I mean, there are a lot of problems with Ethereum that Solana has fixed, one of them being high gas fees, the low transaction rate. Do you think Ethereum 2.0 is going to fix some of these problems?
It's going to take a different approach to them. What it's going to do is use sharding. And there are pros and cons. The pro is that it's easy to parallelize there, right? It's easy to get up a number of threads at once, each computing different things. And so that probably will bring down blockchain costs, bring down confirmation times quite a bit. The cost of this is that there won't be native composability between transactions on different shards. And so if you imagine taking a single order book and sharding it, it doesn't really work, right? Someone puts out an offer at 5,000 for one ETH, and then two people on two different shards both want to buy that ETH. They can't do it, right? Or at least one of them can't do it. So they're not on the right chart to do so. And so that sort of is the cost of sharding.
Okay, interesting. I want to talk about just looking at protocols at large. I've been getting this question from my friends who have a traditional finance background. They say, hey, look, David, there's no cash flow. There's no DCF to analyze. How do I pick a protocol to invest in? What are some of the other criteria that maybe they weren't taught in a business school to look at?
It's tough. And obviously, part of this is memes, right? That's not something that people are usually taught in business schools. But if you look at investing nowadays, not just in crypto, everywhere, memes are really fucking important, right? Drive
that's a great point. That's a great point, Sam, because memes are we were taught to stay away from hype. We were taught to avoid the crowd. But that's exactly what the meme is.
It is. And I think that one of the things that we've seen is because of social media, for the first time, 100,000 individual unaffiliated investors together can be bigger than a pension fund and can move markets in a way which is lasting, not just a flash in the pan in some cases. Now, in some cases, it is a flash in the pan, right? And meme stocks, meme tokens tend to be very volatile. They tend to be risky. And you should absolutely not put anything more than you're absolutely willing to lose into them. It's an important part of modern investing is understanding meme cycles. And so I think that sort of is one pretty important factor that I think doesn't get necessarily, it's sort of time of day in business school classes. Outside of that, I think a lot of this is looking at future portfolio, future protocol adoption, looking at what projects might be building, how much value might be transacting through a protocol, how much fees might people be willing to pay to use that protocol in the future if it gets to the point of adoption that it could get to?
Yeah. I mean, talking about meme coins, what advice do you have for somebody looking at meme coins and not sure whether or not this is legit? Because what are some of the red flags or criteria you're looking for? I mean, take recently, for example, there's lots of examples just off the top of my head. Squid Game coin. I watched Netflix series. I loved the show. And then the coin came out. I missed it. I missed the 70,000% return in a couple days or whatever it was. And then it crashed to zero and got rug pulled. And some people lost all their money. One guy lost all his life savings. I mean, we hear these sad stories, but ultimately, they bought into it. Nobody forced them to do it. What did they miss? What are the red flags they saw that maybe, well, maybe they didn't see that they should have?
Well, one thing, again, to note is never, ever put more than you're willing to lose into something like that, right? Like, no matter what you're investing in, it could absolutely go down by 90%, right? That is a risk, and that's a risk that you should be cognizant of. Putting that aside for a second, I think, and I actually don't know the details, but I think that the Squid Game token was not actually affiliated, formally speaking, with the Netflix series, right? It was just some guy who named a token after it. I'm not even sure that's exactly legal. Like, there may be some IP things going on there, which are not exactly kosher. More generally, I think early on in the cycle of a meme token is quite difficult often to figure out whether or not it's going to be a rug pull, right? Like, I mean, it's just like often up to the, the creators, whether to do it.
Yeah, I mean, in this particular case, I think the creators were anonymous or chose to stay anonymous. Is that a
right? That's right. And so you can't even judge their background. So one thing to look at here is what does the supply distribution of the token look like,
interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
Is there something like a creator or a founder who owns, 60% of the token supply? If so, and if you don't know who that person is and you have no trust in them, right, there's always going to be the risk that they rug pull, right? Okay. If they don't own any tokens and can't mint any more tokens, there's a lot less that they could do potentially to, gain value at the expense of the purchasers of the token. So that is one flag that you can look for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Last question about the markets. We'll move on to FTX. I get asked this all the time. You probably get asked this all the time. Any projects you think will have 100x potential?
It's tough, right? And I think a lot of them have that potential, but that doesn't mean the odds are that high that they'll realize it.
Right.
I certainly want to stay away from making, specific calls. But I think the thing that I would say is, like, find a team that you think is really great early on. That I think is like the most reliable predictor that there's a chance of that.
What do you think about crypto staking? We see a lot of these coins come out and you stake it. It promises you this particular coin, I'm thinking of my friends in it, 8,000% return. You can't withdraw your cash until the end of the staking period. It's unclear how these returns are generated. Different protocols have different return generation methods. What's your sentiment on staking?
So it's a wide field. Yeah. Some of these pools can be fairly lucrative. Some of them are not as lucrative as they seem. You have to look into the details. So what should you look into? First of all, what are the staking rewards paid in, right? If the staking rewards are paid in an asset that has some adoption or stability, right? If they're paid in, a stablecoin or even like Bitcoin or Ethereum, right? You can sort of more trust that sort of is real value that you're getting. If they're paid in the same token you're staking, then if that token crashes, so do the staking rewards. And if they're being locked up for a little while, right, then there's a risk that it crashes before you could even theoretically sell them. That doesn't mean it's necessarily bad to stake, but it's not necessarily good either. It's not like a free interest rate that you're getting on that, right? Because the interest is being paid in the same volatile thing you're staking, and you may not have a way to hedge that or to even sell it for a little while. That's one thing. Again, it's not say it's necessarily bad, but it's not nearly as guaranteed as it might seem that it will be good. And so that's one thing that you can look at there. Obviously looking at the protocol, understanding if this is a safe protocol or if there's like potential for some unknown intrusion in it. And then the last thing is, when you talk about rug pulls, right? If you're staking illiquid token, even if the interest rate is in real dollars, if they're paying 10% a day, but after 3 days the token goes to zero, you've still lost money.
Yeah.
And so, the last thing is like think about like how do I feel having exposure to this token while I'm staking it?
Okay, that's good advice. You've told this story many times, the story of your founding. You've been on many other channels talking about it, but this is your first time on our channel. So I'd like to just run over your history. Now, you started your career as a quant trader, then you moved into cryptocurrencies doing arbitrage. Tell us that story, and we'll talk a little bit about arbitrage for those investors who are curious to know what that means.
Totally. So, you know, I got involved in crypto in late 2017 when it was sort of going through its first giant public bull run. And, you know, at the time, to see that there were potentially arbitrage opportunities was actually pretty easy. You just go to coinmarketcap.com, you click on Bitcoin, and it just lists all the exchanges it was scraping Bitcoin data from. And it lists the price on each exchange. And those numbers were not all the same. You know, some of them were much bigger than others. And that's a sign that potentially there's an arbitrage too, where you buy Bitcoin on the cheaper exchange, send it to the richer exchange and sell it there. Now, some of those were not real, right? Sometimes the USD on one of these exchanges would not real dollars and it would cost 20% to get it out. And so that sort of wasn't real arbitrage, but some of them were real. And probably the biggest real one that we found early on was in Japan, where Japanese cryptocurrency exchanges were trading, you know, 5 to 15% higher than US cryptocurrency exchanges were, because of massive demand for crypto in Japan. And you know, the Japanese yen, it's a free floating currency. In theory, one could do that arbitrage. And so we spent a bunch of time building up the infrastructure necessary to do that in terms of the international banking, the exchange connectivity, and everything else.
Do you think arbitrage opportunities are smaller now that there's more liquidity and the markets have matured a bit since then?
They're way smaller in percentage terms, right? They've gone from percents to basis points. Now there's more volume that trades today than there was before. So that's not to say there's, you know, no good trades. So like you can scale them to the extent you find them, but they are much, much smaller because there's a lot more liquidity in the space than there used to be.
So when you built FTX, what was your primary goal? What did you aim to achieve to do and set out to do that maybe some other existing exchanges haven't done yet?
There are a lot of different goals, but I think at the time, the biggest thing was the risk engine. Right, we looked at how other exchanges manage risk on leveraged positions, and it was a total shit show. You know, there were exchanges that were losing $1 million a day of customer assets to having dysfunctional risk engines. On most exchanges, you had to manage separately 500 different margin wallets with no cross margining, no relationship to each other, get liquidated on one with complete disregard for your assets on the other. That's a complete disaster as a customer experience. And so building one coherent risk engine that cross-margined all of the products and had reasonable parameters to be able to close down positions before accounts could go beyond bankruptcy was one of the largest things that we saw.
Okay. Now, let's talk about your recent activity and we'll talk about your future goals. WonderFi recently got listed on FTX. Tell us about that partnership.
Yeah, really excited to be working with them, excited to be listing it. I'm excited to find more ways to use the stock token program that we have. It's a Boffin regulated offering. And it allows us potentially to bring equities onto the blockchain in a regulated fashion, which I think is really exciting. Really excited to see there's sort of a cool stacking going on here, right? Where you have WonderFi just operating in the crypto ecosystem in DeFi, which then gets listed on a traditional equities exchange, and then that gets ported back over to the crypto ecosystem,
right
with the FTX listing, and so it brings that back to the ecosystem that the project itself is operating in, which I think is super cool.
Okay, all right. And I mean, why WonderFi in particular?
It's something that we'd seen excitement for. We've partnered with with the team on various things. And we're excited to bring, crypto ecosystem equities to FTX through the stock token program in general. We're excited to bridge, in the same way that it's bridging access in DeFi, we're excited to bridge access to it between crypto and traditional finance.
Yeah. I've spoken to Ben Summer, actually, the CEO of WonderFi. He's great. So excited for you guys on this partnership. Yeah. Cycle.